and welcome to episode 91 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about the social contracts in board gaming, from cell phone usage to sticky snacks, from taking things seriously to messing around. Cheating, sportsmanship, inclusion. These things and more vary from group to group and are all wrapped into social contracts we play within. Today, we'll take a close look at these issues and discuss when it's best to formalize the rules and when you can just let them organically form themselves. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and our newest friend of the show, the SGC, and our newest patron, Christine Meyer. Thank you. And a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Yes, indeed. And I like that the SGC is our first acronym patron.
Yeah, I wonder what it is.
So it's there's a little bit of a story there, but I'm just going to keep people guessing. Ooh. So I was informed that they would only back us if it was top secret and no one could know who was behind it. So, and it wasn't actually that. I'm paraphrasing quite a bit, but that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, Josh isn't here today. It was Mother's Day weekend and then drinks with the boss and, you know, Josh has a real life.
Yeah. Josh is too busy to hang out with us.
So we're sad and alone once again. Although we are going to switch things up in the very, very near future, as in possibly even next week. So you'll still hear from all three of us just in kind of a different way. Keep listening and you'll find out all about that. Let's see. News and announcements. I just got back from the CMON Expo. It was very fun. I'm going to keep going to this convention for as long as they do it. It's really, really small. Somewhere between, I heard a bunch of different numbers between 200 and 600. I would guess it's probably 300 to 400 ish in that range. But it's really just CMON. They rented out a ballroom inside of a hotel, and it was 3 days of playing miniatures. Well, CMON games. A lot of them had miniatures, but they do a lot of games I didn't even realize. They have a number of Euro games that were interesting. The biggest scoop is probably Gizmos, Gizmos, which they're targeting for Gen Con. And this is a more gamified version of Potion Explosion. So it's marbles. It's coming out of a track. You use the marbles to basically power gadgets, and you're trying to make the best
gizmos, some would say.
Gizmo. Yeah, basically. You're trying to win a science fair.
Oh, that's fun. But
yeah. And I mean, it looks cool. The table presence is cool. How to play it, you can learn it in like 2.5 minutes. And there's a lot of depth there. So I'm really looking forward to this one. I also played Zombicide Black Plague for the first time. So I played Zombicide and I wasn't really all that thrilled with it. They had Black Plague there and I'm like, all right, I should give this a try. And now I'm hooked on Zombicide. So I bought Zombicide and I bought some expansion heroes and I figured out that my Green Horde pledge, which is the next version, like in the series of the Zombicide series, I forgot to fill out the pledge manager. So now I have to get CMON to still send that to me. I think I've sorted that out. And then, yeah, so now I'm all excited about Zombicide Invaders or Invasion, whatever the space one is. Because that pledge manager just closed too. So I'm excited about that. I also got free games. They gave me Godfather and Way of the Panda. And there's a bunch of other promos they give you. Like, this show was really kind of nice. $35 and they just give you a bag of loot and say, hey, play all our games.
Awesome.
All weekend long. So great stuff. Let's see. Oh, I still need Kickstarter questions. So next week we are going to do an episode on Kickstarter. I have several things I will talk about, but if you have any specific questions, let me know. I do have one rather lengthy question regarding a particular company and their ethicalness on Kickstarter. So yeah, that's a teaser for next week. Gen Con registration is actually open, so I'm just going to mention that we do have a live show there. That's Friday at 5 o'clock, whatever Friday the date is for Gen Con. And our live shows at Gen Con usually mean I'm coming with a stack of games and I'm leaving with none. So if you want to come to that, you might get included in us chatting and talking and asking questions and just talking about the show in general, and you may win some games too. Speaking of winning games, Seventh Continent is our current giveaway. I woke up this morning being like, wait a minute, who won Seventh Continent? I don't remember sending it out, but I know I have to send it to some, like, the second version. And then I realized that's our current contest and no one's won it yet.
We still got some time left in May.
You still do. Yes. So I think we have two more weeks before that one gets closed. So if you want to enter that, just email us at giveaway@tabletopgametalk.com. Put the subject as May giveaway. And also put your name and country of origin in there. If you're outside of the U.S., let me know that you're willing to pay for shipping. If you're inside the U.S., I will cover shipping. But if you're outside the U.S. and you want to be considered for the drawing, just let me know, you'll cover the shipping. And keep in mind that shipping is not cheap. If you're outside of the U.S., you might have a better idea than me, but it's somewhere typically between $70 and $100. Okay, what else do we have here? Oh, I talked about My Little Scythe last week, and I did not realize, but apparently we have the listener who designed the game is a listener. The listener who designed the game is a listener. Anyway.
Chris is good at grammar.
I grammar the best. I grammar so well. So Hobie Chow actually posted on the thread on BGG, thanks for mentioning My Little Scythe. Of course, that's like an awesome thing. He mentions that since it wasn't in reference specifically to iconography, but he's interested in our, you know, kind of opinion on what iconography they chose for it. So I'm going to be ordering this game relatively in the near future, probably not today, but maybe tomorrow. And as long as pre-orders are open or ordering is open. And Hobie, I will let you know. I'm excited to get it. What else do we have? I think that's about it before I go to Kickstarters. And I'm going to try to make Kickstarters.
It's like our shortest announcements in a while.
I know. I'm trying to get through these a little bit faster. Because
streamline, yeah,
streamline, and I think we should have more time talking about topics. So that's part of why we're going to make some minor changes in the near future. And by minor, I mean drastically huge changes, but mostly minor. All right, Kickstarters. I backed Black Rose this week. It's actually, is that the full name for it? I'm double checking here. It is, yeah, Black Rose Wars, actually, is the name of it. And I don't think this was on my watch list before. It sort of popped up. Yeah, it sort of popped up on BGG, and then I took a look at it, and then I watched the video. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And then Tom Bassel did a playthrough of it, and I'm like, okay, this really does look interesting. And of the other games that were in the Time is Running Out, this one just won out. Mostly actually because of the cost. The other game I was looking at when I looked at the cost was like something like $240. I'm like, that's a big one. So, and Black Rose is not cheap. The Black Rose base game is $99. And if you want the base game plus the expansion, it's $139. It ends on the 20th, which I think is about 3-4 days from when this drops. So you're still not too late to get it. But this is kind of interesting. It's a maze, not a maze. It is a mage battle royale. And the board is made up of these different hex rooms. And each room has a different ability that you can use once you go inside of it. But what's kind of cool about this is your mage has a certain magic school preference. And there's a number of different schools, and so your preference, maybe your preference is destruction magic. You'll draw two spells from the destruction deck, and then you can draw four spells from any school of magic. Of those, you keep two. So then you have four cards in your hand to start with, and then you'll play those in kind of a programmed manner, so you're playing them face down, that these are what I'm going to play through the turn, and that kind of goes all around. And that's about as far as I got before I'm like, yeah, this is definitely actually really interesting. I'm going to have to give this a try. So that's Black Rose Wars. If you like dueling mages, you might like this. It plays 1-4 out of the box, the base game. Solo mode was added as a stretch goal. And then there's an expansion where you can do 5 and 6 players as well. That's an add-on. So if you wanted to do a 6-player free-for-all, you could do that. So that is Black Rose. And then there's a couple that I'm, well, one that I'm watching and one that actually doesn't exist yet, but I need to give everyone a heads up. So the one I'm watching is 1 Week Werewolf. this is Bezier's way of, you know, really capitalizing on this one, on werewolf in general. So they did one night werewolf, one night vampire, one night aliens, one night something else I'm forgetting. Then they did some werefood or werewolf or werechow or something. All I know is I have cans of werewolf food. And now it's 1 week werewolf. Now, this is what they've done here is they've turned one night werewolf into a board game that lasts over a number of nights. And coincidentally, this is also running around from room to room, each room having a different special ability you can use. So I don't know if Black Rose stole it from 1 week or 1 week stole it from Black Rose, or it was just one of those things where they just happened at the same
coincidence.
Time. Coincidence. But this is more of a board game version. This is still deduction. You're still at the end of the game. You're trying to find out who the wolf is, or Tanner or villager. But there's more mechanics involved during the game, which may make it, it's a little deeper than one night werewolf, but still not so social deduction accusation-ish.
Those are words. Based.
Oh, those are, that's a much better word. And there's no elimination. So this one, actually, I'm kind of thinking this has some pretty decent potential. I want to do a little bit more research on it, but that's 1 week werewolf. That ends June 12th. The base game is $45, but if you want to get like the super deluxe version with card sleeves and upgraded components and all of that, then it's $100 for that version. And then the last one I'm going to talk about is Arcadia Quest Riders. So Arcadia Quest is one of my favorite games. Probably, well, definitely in my top five, probably in my top two or three if I was really to sit down. But they are doing a Kickstarter for their Riders expansion, which they did a pets one where you run around and you have little pets that come with you, and that's adorable. This one is mounts, so you can be riding like hippogriffs and things like that. And they're doing a flash Kickstarter, so it's only going to exist for 5 days, and this is the first time they've done it. And there, I think the theory behind this is the biggest hype is at the beginning and the end of the Kickstarter, so they're just going to cut out all the middle. They're giving you all of the stretch goals, all of the everything, all up front, and you have from Monday, May 21st to Friday, May 25th to back it or not. So that's the whole thing. So if you're into Arcadia Quest, this was at CMON Expo. I did not play it, but I watched it played, and it's really kind of cool. One of the coolest thing about the mounts is they kind of shove characters out of the way, so you can like move people out into different spaces by shoving them. So it's kind of cool. I have no idea on prices. I have no idea on really anything about the campaign, except that it's going to exist between that time frame. Now, that is 1 week. Well, 6 days from when this episode drops, and I will assure you that when we talk next week, this will be the Kickstarter that I'm backing, because it's Arcadia Quest, and it's CMON, and all kinds of extras.
So does this mean you didn't back Court of the Dead?
I did not back Court of the Dead.
No.
I think that, well, I think I have still have time on that, though, right? Nope.
No, it's the 18th. Don't.
All right, well, Sydney said that I should get you to back Court of the Dead. So
We'll see what Spencer says about Sydney saying that.
It looks really cool.
It does look really cool.
And I think you should get it.
We'll see.
It's, yeah, Court of the Dead, Mourner's Call. It's a dark game. I did get to more information on, on Court of the Dead.
You put up a video of it on Facebook, which was it surprised me because normally I'm the one who posts on the Facebook.
Well, what actually happened is Sydney kept saying, hey, you should post this on Facebook. Hey, you should post this on Facebook. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to give you admin rights to the Facebook page. And sure, I totally post this video.
Well, thanks, Sydney.
So now we have more people to be able to interact with Facebook. So, but this looks good. I mean, it's this thing where heaven and hell are fighting, and they're like, I think they kind of take it as this twist where they're kind of a corrupt bureaucracies. Like, neither one is great. They are just, you know, trying to fight over the souls of the dead. And then you have Death, who has his own agenda. And Death is like, yeah, we want to do our own thing down here. But while we're doing that, we still have to pay heaven and hell to make sure that they don't realize anything's going wrong. So you have to pay them in souls while you're trying to manipulate and be, you know, kind of take over the realm of the dead. So It looks really, really cool. It didn't draw me only because the theme, I like bright and cheery, and it's not quite bright and cheery. More
up my alley, maybe.
Yeah, I say it's, and you should back more things on Kickstarter. Why? Because.
Well, that's a great argument.
You can't argue against it.
All right. What are we reviewing this week?
City of Kings. So I backed the expansion last week, and I wanted to justify that by actually playing the game. So I got Sydney to play it with me. This game is actually really cool. And there are some people who don't like certain aspects of it, and I can see why. But there's a lot of potential here. And not even a lot of potential. There's a lot of game here. So basically what this is it's a scenario-based story game. So you can just set up a particular scenario and play it through. Or it has an actual full story, which is a number of linked scenarios that you can play through. It is resource management, territory exploration, monster killing, leveling up your hero. There's all of these different aspects in it that make it like really cool. It's very, very Euro-y, which means, you know, the tiles are random. What cards you draw might be random, but when you attack something, it's like you do this amount of damage. It also has this, one of the attributes that you can level up is luck. So if you level up luck, then you can roll some dice that will actually add to your strength. So instead of knowing how much damage you are doing, you can do a little bit more. Any resource gathered will be, that's also rolled. So your workers, you have workers that go around, and you have a hero. The hero can go around and kill monsters. The workers go around and collect resources. And when workers collect resources, you also roll a die, which will give you something between none and four resources based on every die you have. And you can upgrade your workers so they can roll multiple dice. So it's, most of this is Euro-ish type of game. So it's a Euro exploration co-op. It can be full single player. You would not need to play, like, you can play two, I think it's two heroes as a single player, but all information's open. I really do like this. I think that the expansion will add more, even more story and content and items and such. Now, a couple things that I know that people complain about. One, the monsters are randomly generated. Pretty much everything about this game is randomly generated. There's a story. It's take these, this tile set, shuffle them, and, you know, put them out randomly. So the monsters, as you get them, so you pull a monster, the stat bars are going to be, they progress from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's always the same thing. You're going to grab random abilities from these different draw bags that are easy, medium, and hard. And that kind of modifies the monsters, but they don't look like anything. They're just kind of like little symbols. So there's not a lot of personality in the monsters. That's probably the biggest thing that can kind of take you out of it and make it a little bit more mechanical. But the game is more of a puzzle than it is like this, it's a puzzle. It's a Euro puzzle style game. So you know what to expect with a little bit of randomness as to what you have to face. So all in all, that's City of Kings. If you want to back it, it's still available on Kickstarter. You can get it through with the expansion stuff. And there's plenty of reviews out there and playthroughs and stuff. So if you kind of get a feel for what it is before you back it, that's pretty good. All right, let's go and do some feedback.
All right, so we have some feedback about past episodes. If you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com or go to our Board Game Geek forums easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. Our first feedback is from Sam on learning iconography. After a friend introduced me to Race for the Galaxy, I grokked the game, but not the language. I wanted to play more, but found it difficult to get past learning the language. As you mentioned, learning a new language takes practice. I eventually downloaded the app on the iPad and began playing. Playing on the app helped me to understand the language, and even better, clicking on the card also pulls up the explanation of the card.
Yeah, I played this a little bit on the airplane back from CMON Expo on the phone. On the phone, it's really, really small. And then you're trying to figure out the icons on the tiny screen. But it does help. And I'm like, oh, and you start to figure it out after a while. So the more you play anything, the faster you're going to learn it. And I think when you're doing apps and stuff, it makes it so you can get a lot more plays in. And that whole, you know, tap and hold to get explanations of what the icons are, that actually helps quite a bit.
It sounds almost like a duo language, like, or Duolingo for the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, it gives you that, you know, help text as opposed to symbology stuff. So it's sort of the best of both worlds, because if you know the icons, great, you don't need to do anything. And if you don't, well, you have the pop-up text there. So let's see. Terry Ashe actually mentioned Race for the Galaxy as well. And I think may have taken a wrong day. They laughed because of an example of a game that didn't have too much iconography for a board game. We truly believe that Race for the Galaxy has too much iconography. However, I think the point we were kind of getting at is for that game, like, that's what they chose specifically so it could be more language independent and such. Let's see, they go on. So I love deck builders. In fact, Marvel Legendary is my top 10 favorite games of all time. Strangely, though, I tend to play Star Realms more often as it's a lot faster to set up and take down. So they came out with Cthulhu Realms, which used heavy iconography, and I couldn't stand it. This
incarnation.
That's the word. I was hoping you'd save me sooner than that.
Sorry.
For that very reason. After Star Realms and Hero Realms did very well in the market, and Cthulhu Realms flopped. So I think the premise here is Cthulhu Realms didn't do as well because they used too much iconography. I wouldn't doubt that. If it's a bigger gap to get into, I think that that's, you know, it's not going to do as well. Also, I think that everybody and their brother came out with a Cthulhu game 2 years ago at Gen Con, and there was just too much Cthulhu flooding.
Flooded the market.
Yeah. If I never see another Cthulhu game, I'd be happy, but I do know that there's at least another one coming out soon. I think, so not to name drop or anything, but I'm totally going to name drop. I spent pretty much Friday and Saturday night playing games up until like 2 o'clock in the morning with Eric Lang, and they announced a partnership. Eric Lang and Rob Davio are doing a game together based on Cthulhu. So and it's not a legacy game, even though that's the first thing I asked. It's like, nope, it's not a legacy game. So I'm like, all right. So that was, wait, did I?
So we've got two twice? Here from the same person, it looks like, or you just named someone.
I may have misnamed somebody, but go ahead and read it.
And then, so this might be from Terry Ashe on Mage Wars. Wow, so I'm trying to teach my girlfriend a game that even Chris doesn't bother trying to teach to you guys. She actually is slowly learning and wants to keep trying despite the occasional frustrations. An update on my previous message, I did get my hands on Mall Madness over the weekend. We've played a couple games, and I'm impressed by the technology given how old it is. I'm very excited to put together the epic Last Night on Earth scenario soon, though I'll need to teach a few more friends the game first. And in the biggest news, I got Gloomhaven. After convincing myself that we couldn't afford the crazy resale prices and that I'd have to wait for the next print release, I randomly had a guy on Nextdoor message me that he had an unused copy. He just wanted someone who would love it. Let's try this again. He just wanted someone who would love to have it since it was too complex for him. So he sold it to me for sticker price. I can't wait to get it to the table. But first, I've got some major organizing to do. Yes, you do.
Oh, yeah. So this is, and I'm pretty sure I got his name wrong on the last one too, because I got an email or a BGG post that said, hey, you mentioned that I was talking about Mage Wars and that wasn't me. So Tim... I'm apologizing. This is Tim Waterman, who's been talking about Mage Wars for 2 weeks and Mall Madness and all of that. So sometimes copy and paste errors happen. It's all good. Man, we're just spot on today. We're doing good.
I haven't slept. I don't know what your excuse is.
No, I'm just going to edit all this out. So that's, yeah, all good. No one will ever know any of this happened. It'll be like, and we got a message from Tim Waterman on Mage Wars. To be perfect. Let's see. Jeremy started a thread on BGG about the personality test versus board game thing. So if you want to participate in that, go over there. Sam actually also chimed in that said he would like to help with that process. So to BGG. You can go tabletopgametalk.com/BGG and you'll see the thread there. It is, what do they call it? Personality, something. You'll see it. It's right on the top. And then we got a great deal of feedback. Apparently, I misspoke on what the upper left number of Terraforming Mars meant. It's not the cost to keep the card. It's the cost to play the card. I'm going to say in my defense, see, bad iconography. In the game defense, it's very clear. So you spend three to keep a card, and then to play the card, you spend whatever's in the upper left corner. So I'm like, okay, all right. That was me, totally wrong. Let's see. And nothing in the top right dictates whether a card can be played. That is true. And Joe's the person that I mistakenly said was talking about Mage Wars last week. But anyway, that is true. The upper right corner doesn't have anything that says what you can play. It usually is either a icon that is referenced by other cards that will give you points at some point, or it's a card that makes the card cheaper to play because it's like gives you some kind of discount because it's the brown building or some titanium or something like that. Terraforming Mars. Oh, and he also is like, where did you hear that they're making a deluxe version? I've not heard that news. Joe, let's just say that I sometimes talk to people, and the fact that, well, actually, he may have even mentioned this on... So the person I'm talking about is Stephen Bonacore. I think he mentioned it somewhere in passing, but not as an announcement. They are going to do a deluxe version of this game. They're not going to announce when it's done or it's going to happen until it's done. But we talked to him, this was almost a year or a little over a year ago, year and a half ago. And we were talking about a deluxe version of Terraforming Mars at that point. And he's like, if we do one, we're going to do all of the expansions first, and then the deluxe version will have everything all together. So if you like Terraforming Mars and you're buying all the expansions, you're buying it because you love it. But expect that you're going to see a deluxe version come after that. And if you really like it, you'll have played it so much that your cards won't actually hold together anymore, and you'll need the deluxe version. All right, let's move on to something that's more on topic. I think we're all going on topic. Yeah, let's do this. Let's go on topic.
In this episode, we're talking about the social contracts. We've touched on many of what makes... We've touched on many of the things, I think, that make up a social contract in recent episodes. So this week, we're going to look at how it all fits together.
I'm telling you, we're spot on to say. All right. Okay. We'll edit that part out too. It'll just go from the music too. And this topic came from Ann Reynolds. this is way back when we were doing our suggested topic stuff. And this one's finally made it into the mix. So Ann, and I know you're still listening because you're all over BGG. send me your address and t-shirt size, and I'm going to send you a t-shirt. So she writes, social contracts are fairly common with role-playing games, especially at conventions. Does the analog exist for board games? If so, what are the social conventions? So I think that this is, it's bigger than just social contracts. I went kind of back and forth whether or not I wanted to social contracts versus the concept of the magic circle. I think they're related enough where we're going to kind of talk about all of it. And this one, there's a lot to it. And we've talked about cheating and table talk and hygiene and all of these things in the past, but we're going to kind of net them all into one thing here. So let's start out with the expectations of setting with... So basically, what do we expect from when we want to sit down and play the game? Like, how we're going to play the game, how we're going to approach it. Is this going to be a casual game? Is this going to be super competitive? Are we just playing to have a good time? Or are we trying to, like, you know... Are we super serious about it? You know, we talked about kind of in our analysis paralysis episode where one of the problems is if one person's like really wants to focus on the game and they're taking it seriously, and the other people are just like, I just want to take my turn and, you know, explore the rules, that's a miscommunication at the very beginning. Does that make sense?
I think so. I also think this ties into our conversation about competitive friend and non-competitive friend really well.
Yes.
It's that, say, the mismatch of ideas sitting down to play the game before it even begins.
Yep. So, and I think this is really where in board games, you want to make sure this is understood more than anything else. Like at a convention, and you don't see this happen all the time, but if you're at a convention and you're sitting down to demo a game, you're expecting, you should expect that you are trying to learn the game and get a feel for it. I don't think you should expect to win the game, because in a demo, you're typically not playing a full game anyway. And if you're trying to win a demo, you could be taking the point of demoing the game to the wrong level, right? But you'll still see this. You'll see people sit down and it's like, oh, this is a demo. How do I play this? And okay, well, what am I doing here? And why do like this? Oh, and hold on, let me think about this. And I'm going to concentrate on all of this. I think that it's not spelled out well. And we don't really do that at a convention game, saying, hey, this is a demo. You know, if you are wondering about the rules, sure, let me know. If you're wondering about a strategy, ask the question. And, you know, we can talk through that, as opposed to, you know, trying to take a demo that should be 15 minutes long, stretching into an hour long, while 20 people are behind you that also want to try out the game.
Yeah.
So that is sort of my expectations for like a convention thing in a demo. But when you're playing with your normal game group, this is where I think it's worth talking about ahead of time. And when we talked, you know, when we had the, oh, what is it? Photosynthesis incident.
Yes.
You know, we actually had a heart-to-heart after that. And since we had that conversation, we've all been on the same page a lot better than we were before.
Yeah. So if you didn't hear about the photosynthesis incident, when we sat down, Josh was playing to win. He was like taking his time, really thinking out his strategy. And it made what should have been a 45-minute game, just so we could, you know, have something to talk about, get something played. We hadn't played in a while, and turned it into like a 3-hour-long experience where me and Chris were like practically not engaged with the game anymore.
Right, because we were waiting for so long and we were looking for something different. We wanted to play through the game, get a feel for it, and play another game afterwards.
Yes.
And we just didn't have the time to play that second game. So at a certain point, we got frustrated because we wanted to play another game as well. And we knew that it wasn't going to happen. We weren't necessarily playing as hard as he was, although he totally destroyed us.
Yeah, because I think at some point it became obvious he was totally destroying us and we just gave up.
Right. It's like there's nothing we can do to come back from this. But we still played for another hour.
Yeah.
Well, he went through and continued to destroy us even more so. So, and it's tough when it comes, when that happens and then you have to have the conversation. And that can happen in a lot of different realms as well. There's many different things that can happen during a game where it's like, okay, now we're passionately upset with each other in some way and we need to just vent this out. Where if we would have addressed it up front, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So, actually, speaking of the Scythe game with competitive player, non-competitive player, he emailed me again letting me know that after that episode, his group actually played the best session yet, because they were able to take that episode, listen to it, and really kind of like look within their gaming group and say, yeah, I guess there is this difference here and we aren't all on the same page. But now that the subjects come up, we can get on the same page. So they now do multiple episodes, or not multiple episodes, but instead of one play session a month, they're doing two. They're, you know, much more cohesive in general because they have that understanding. So like I say, the expectations of what you're doing and making sure everyone's on the same page, I think that's one of the most important things you can do with a social contract at all. So, but now let's take a look at another type of game. So, and I'm going to bring up Cards Against Humanity because the topic we're going to talk about is party games. With party games, this can be a tricky one as well, because party games tend to be, I don't want to say this is not a blanket statement, but in my experience, a lot of times party games tend not to be sober games. You know, it's late at night, you know, you're at a party, you're having fun. There's usually some kind of drinking involved, and you can get really lax and really loose in this situation. And especially something like Cards Against Humanity, where if not everybody's on that same page, it can be really awkward for some people. And,
yeah,
you know, so, I mean, like, would you play Cards Against Humanity with your family?
No. I would not.
And it would never, right? It would never even come up to do that.
No. I would play apples to apples with my family.
No, I would never do that.
Which is like nice Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah. And that was sort of the point, right? It's like, here's this family party game. And now let's turn it into a drinking party game. Or, yeah, you know, just more of a sub-social. I don't want to say that. That sounds really bad. I personally, it's not the content that of Cards Against Humanity that bothers me. It's the fact that it's not a game that bothers me.
I think what your problem with it is might be a social contract issue, is that a lot of people say, hey, come over to my place, we're having a game night. And you think, awesome, I'm going to get to play Scythe. Maybe we can play some, I don't know, what's a good, Carcassonne, something else. You know, like, I'm going to sit down and play these board games that I don't get to the table very often, especially ones with some of the higher player counts that play better that way. And then you get there and they're like, all right, here's the, you know, six pack of beer and let's get out Cards Against Humanity. And it's not what you thought you were getting into.
Exactly. It's going, yeah. And that's really what it is. And again, it's that whole social expectation type of thing where it's like, I expect game night to mean one thing. I don't expect it to mean getting 15 people together and playing Cards Against Humanity. Yeah. Like, that to me, it's like, just call it a party. And I'm okay with that. That my expectations are there. Right. You know, and whatever that happens to be. Mm-hmm. I played a lot of Time's Up this weekend. Apparently, they really like Time's Up. It's not my thing. Time's Up, if you don't know, is, it's kind of, I guess the best way to it's sort of charade-ish. So what happens is you put 40 names in a hat, and you basically crowdsource it from who's playing there. So everyone has some information about what names are there. And then you draw the name, you read it, and you're trying to get people to guess it by describing, you know, what this is, a movie they were in, a song they were singing, whatever. You're trying to get them to guess the name. And for the first round, you can say whatever you want as long as it's, you know, not the name itself and it doesn't rhyme. Great. The second round, you play with the exact same things, but this time you can only say one word and the team only gets one guess to guess that word. And in the third round, you can't say anything. You can only charades, and then the team only gets one guess to try to get it. So that type of game, it's very, very strategic, because what you do in the first round, like, you made some kind of funny gesture when you were trying to describe Mel Gibson, you know. And so in the last round, when you can't say anything, you just make that funny gesture and people know exactly who you're talking about. So there's a lot of strategy involved in this, and it's a pretty deep party game. It's not something I would keep score with. I never keep score. They were very competitive and keeping score, but I'm just like, okay. But I'm really, really bad at these kinds of games. And while it was fun watching them do it, every time I had to get up there to try to, like, put things together, it was like a little mini panic attack of, I don't want to embarrass myself in front of Eric Lang in the group. I'm like, but okay, it's fun. Let's just do it. And there was no alcohol. It was totally sober, which was like really the hard part. So,
see, this is so funny. I feel like I finally found something that I'd be more into than you, because this sounds really fun to me. I love doing this. I love playing Heads Up, the app game. That's really great. We do catchphrase all the time. This feels right in that same kind of category, but I love the added strategy there of how you build the, yeah, I don't know, knowledge, I guess.
Yeah, well, you have like this shared knowledge base that you're coming up with.
Yeah.
It's really hard when you're playing it like three or four times in a row and then you can't remember what.
Yeah, was like, this round, or was that like three games ago?
So, yeah, it was fun. And then we ended up playing a version of it because You can do it just writing on a piece of paper. Everyone contributes. But there's also boxed versions of Time's Up. And we played a boxed version, which was movie titles, song titles, basically titles of things. And I was better at that. But yeah, the names, there was a lot of names I looked at and I just had no idea, because it was like people's names of someone in a band someplace. I'm like, I just don't know. So, but I agreed going in that this was the type of game that we were going to play. So for that, I was okay, and I just knew ahead of time exactly what I was thinking of. So going from, you know, the party game to the serious game, serious games are a lot trickier. So with serious games, this is something that's almost like it's harder. You really have to understand everyone wants to play this game seriously. We're all in the same boat. We're going to sit down. We're going to learn it. We're going to play it. And this is where, you know, people being on their phones when you're trying to teach it I'm not really understanding the rules right now as people are being read to me or setting up or something. So I'm going to walk away and I'm going to miss some things. And when I come back, you know, I'm not going to know what's going on. All of this stuff can lead to some hard feelings when you're in like this serious game mode. But at the same time, I think that's not nearly as bad as people expecting the opposite of me, right? So I'm expecting a game night and it comes to hard Cards Against Humanity. Someone else is expecting a game night and we pull out, you know, my favorite example, Twilight Imperium.
We pick on it so much.
We do. And the thing is, I've never played it. It's just because it takes so long and there's so many rules there. But it's one of those things where when you're doing a game night, when you say game night, there's a lot of different people that are thinking different things with that. So having that conversation ahead of time and saying, this is what I think, or these are the games we're going to play, it at least puts people on the same page. And that way, when they get there, their expectations aren't going to be so different than what the reality of things are. So I mean, have you done that where it's like, okay, I'm expecting just kind of a casual game night, whatever, and then someone pulls out this huge game and you have to try to learn all the rules. And all right, fine, you can include me in those examples.
I'm never expecting casual game night. I think that's like we do mesh up well there, where I'm always like disappointed when it falls down the we're going to just play. Here's another example of game night, and then we all end up playing Telestrations. I love Telestrations. It's a really fun game. But when somebody says game night, that's not what I think.
Yeah. And I actually brought Telestrations up as an example of a game, a party game where you're playing with a bunch of casual people that I do like, mostly because there's no pressure there.
Yeah.
It's that whole, I don't have to try to perform and, you know, when it's my turn to flip through the pictures and stuff, everybody's laughing no matter what happens. And most of the book that I'm flipping through wasn't me anyway.
Yeah.
So you can kind of hide behind the pages easier.
And it's like the point is to misunderstand. Like nobody wants to look through a whole book of like, oh, we all drew a saxophone really well. That's not fun. No.
Yeah, I think I think the saxophone might have been the one where it's like everybody just knew it. Yep, saxophone. And then the person who got that is like, yep, that's a saxophone. And look, they guess saxophone. And yeah. Yep, there's a saxophone. And look, they guess saxophone. Like you want to mess up, but yeah. What about foods and drinks at tables? Like this is part of a social contract, right?
It is. And I think with board games, my expectation is, if I wouldn't eat it on a white couch, I shouldn't eat it while I'm playing a board game.
Oh, that's a good example.
If I'm not going to leave sticky fingerprints, I don't want to get Cheeto dust on everything, nothing should drip. We talked about this, I think, once before, like dry snacks, pretzels are ideal. Nothing too crumbly.
Yeah, and like even a coaster. So like if you're drinking from a can of pop or something and you have this sitting on the table, it's leaving a little ring there that people aren't noticing.
Yeah.
But me across the table, I'm getting a different angle and I'm like just seeing this pool of water that's growing and melting towards my cards. Yeah. So then I'm like cleaning off the table and putting that. And I see this granted, I probably shouldn't play as many games at restaurants as I do. But we have a bunch of cards on the table. And then the waiter comes over and just starts setting food down right in the middle of the play area. Like, without even asking, just like, and like, and it's not just a one-time thing. This happens all the time. So anyway, that is my whole thing. And really what I'm saying is I need to have a social contract with the waiter saying, we're going to play a game on this table. When you bring the food out, we will tell you where to put it because we're playing a game on this table.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, there are some games, though, that might be better choices for restaurants. I'm looking at you, Pyramid Arcade. All of those are great. Oh, the pieces are so washable.
Yeah. Well, I'll still have them. And I agree. That's absolutely the best table game, especially for restaurants. But I'll still have them just, you know, put food down willy-nilly. And they're like, oh, I guess that's a star system now. That's fine. I've never seen in them, like, move the pieces around. It's always just kind of set the food wherever. But anyway, you can't make social contracts with everybody. That's the sort of the point I'm trying to make here. But food and drinks, I think that, and you'll see this a lot with when it's not your game is really the problem. So if I am playing someone else's game, I'm treating it better than I would treat my own game. When I'm watching someone else play my game and I see them treating it like it doesn't belong to anybody, like it's a disposable thing, curling cards. And there's, especially for non-gamers, gamers who grew up playing like with a deck of cards, decks of cards are disposable. So if you're like curling the card or folding it or playing around with it, it's like, okay, fine. You know, you're just used to growing up and being able to buy a new deck of cards. But the cards that you're doing that with right now go in a particular game and they're not disposable. You bend that card, you're basically taking a piece of the game away. And in some ways, you may make that game not playable anymore. You know, if you mark the card in some way.
Exactly. Oh, now I know that card is coming up. I know who the bad guy is because that card got bent, you know?
Right.
It's really tough. And I think it's really hard to, in the moment, correct someone without seeming like a really big jerk. Like, there's no way to be like, hey, could you stop? You know, and it's a big thing in the book world, too. You know, like the dog-eared pages. And I can be guilty of that sometimes, too. But like when I'm reading somebody else's book, I treat it a lot more carefully than I treat my own books. Like, I would never eat and read somebody else's book, but my own books are stained sometimes. Well, I can't think of several books that have Diet Dr. Pepper spilled over them.
Well, and that's okay because that's your own thing. Yeah. But it's like when you're playing with something else or someone else's stuff, or you go to a gaming cafe and you're like, well, we're at a gaming cafe, so this really isn't my game. It's like, yeah, but don't treat it like it's someone else's game because someone else is going to have to play this, even just putting it away. So again, this is sort of a larger social contract type of thing where just have respect for what you're doing and be aware of it. Even like when you're sitting on a table and the cards kind of slowly brush off the side and you're putting your arms on the table and all of a sudden you have a creased card because you're not paying attention that the cards are sitting halfway off the table. So I don't know. This is a tricky one because there are certain people that just do not notice those things. And the other people that do notice it are constantly kind of moving things. You know, you'll see those people because they'll take a glass or something and move it like a couple inches away from the edge of the table because they're like, that's going to fall because you're not paying attention. You're just waving your hands around. All right. What about being respectful of people's time? So you have a gaming group. It's like, okay, we're going to start at 6 o'clock and, you know, we want to get two games in, so we're going to go from 6 to 10:30. That should be enough to get two games in. And then someone's like, oh, well, I'm not going to be there till 6:10. And when they get there, it's like, oh, you know, I need to do a few things. I have to finish answering this email or whatever. And all of a sudden, it's 7 o'clock and before you've even started a game. Like, those types of things are things that I think are worth talking about as well. Or you can just manipulate them and say, we're going to start at 5 o'clock. So everyone else knows 6 o'clock, but we're going to say 5 o'clock just so we can make sure we actually start at 6.
It's a really tough situation because it feels like, you know, the whole point of a game group is that it's supposed to be fun And if you're like making it too serious, making too many rules, putting too much pressure on, like, this is when we start, it doesn't feel like fun anymore. It can start to feel like, is this a job that I have now that like I'm going to get time? Like, am I going to get a formal written warning? Do I have so many before I get fired? and you don't want to have that feel. That can really cause resentment too. Like the person who's like the timekeeper, like no one's going to want to play with that person anymore. If they're always like, you know, like checking their watch the whole time you're playing. No one likes that either. So, you know, I think there's a happy medium of like, give everyone like a 15-minute grace period to like use the bathroom, sit down, check their phones, put them away, whatever it is.
Yeah, there should definitely be a warm-up period inside of any gaming group.
Yeah.
So if you're like, okay, we're going to meet at 6 o'clock and we don't actually plan to start playing till 6:30 because, you know, we're getting together, we're socializing, you know, are getting set up, catching up. Like, that's completely fine. It's the person who shows up at 6:35 saying, oh, well, I knew you guys weren't going to start till 6 or 6:30 anyway. So yeah. I know I'm a little late. It's like, well, no, you're a lot late because now all the stuff that you want to do, we've already done.
Yeah.
Don't mind me. I'm just venting again.
We could rename this episode Chris's Pet Peeves.
Nah, that was mostly last episode. Well, I don't know. And that's, maybe you're right. Maybe this is... We don't really need to have a social contract if nobody's doing anything that bothers other people, right? So I think this could be everyone's pet peeves.
Like the social contract is just, you know, like manage everyone's pet peeves so that not like there's, you know, so much give on each side so that, you know, isn't that what they say a good compromise is that everyone feels like they're taking a step together? Like if one person takes all the steps or everyone feels like they've given everything up.
Yeah. It's a good compromise when everyone loses. That's, yeah. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. So everyone has to move together to make gaming work, which, you know, we can maybe define. We've talked about the magic circle a couple times. Maybe you could like define the magic circle for us.
Yeah. All right. So the magic circle, and this is a concept that I heard about first on Ludology, I think, but the idea, once you hear it, it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So the premise is this. If we sit down and play a board game, and it can be anything, but we're sitting down, we're playing Monopoly. We all are agreeing to play to a certain set of rules. And in the case of Monopoly, it's probably not the actual written set of rules. But as a group, we are going to play this game by this agreed upon set of rules. If one person breaks that assumption, they've broken that magic circle. Like, there's nothing that says that when I roll these dice and I roll a 6 that I need to move 6 spaces. If I move 7, I'm going to be better. So I'm just going to, you know, nudge it to the 7. And if nobody notices, that works. I mean, and I'm better off for it. You've broken the idea of what you're sitting there to do. Like, and as soon as you do that, the whole structure breaks down. I don't want to put, you know, make it sound so dramatic, but that really does happen. I met someone this weekend who we were talking about this type of conversation, and we're talking about Seven Wonders, actually. With Seven Wonders, everyone takes simultaneous turns, and he had never played it before. And he's like, well, how do you make sure that people aren't cheating if everyone's taking simultaneous turns and they're not, you're not being able to pay attention to what everyone's doing? And my rebuttal was, if you're playing with someone who you're worried about them cheating, then you don't want to play with them anyway, because you have to agree that these are the rules we're playing by. Now, there is certainly the exception of sometimes rules are complicated and people are inadvertently playing the game wrong. That's totally different than cheating.
There's like an intention with cheating. Like you're doing it to benefit yourself, whereas there's a lack of intention of, oh, we just didn't know.
Right. So for something like that, I think that if you are playing with someone who would cheat, that's it. That's deal breaker. That's where we have the conversation of, hey, I mean, you didn't win. You cheated. And not only did you not win, you made everyone not have a good time. We played this game for 3 hours and found out that you were cheating half the time. That's not cool. Like, yeah. There's nothing cool about that. There was a story... And on the Dice Tower, actually, it was a story that somebody had written in where they were playing Codenames. And under the table, one team was you know, the person would be kind of like hovering their hand above the clues, trying to talk it out. And anytime their finger was over the clue, the person giving the clue would tap that person's foot. And then that's cheating. Exactly. So it's like they were doing amazing. Like you could just boom, 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 because they were cheating. And instead, so the other team said, okay, well, someone on that team figured out they were cheating. So he started tapping the person's foot as he was going around and making him do bad guesses. Now, in one way, you can look at that and say, haha, they got their comeuppance, you know, everyone had a good time. And another way you could look at it and say, this is a gaming group that I would never, ever want to play with.
Yeah.
Like, it breaks all of the agreed upon rules of what you're trying to put yourself in. And that's really the magic circle. That's where breaking that circle is. You all have to agree that you're doing the same thing by the same rules. And if you don't, you're ruining it for everybody. A circle is not a circle if there's a hole in it, I don't think. Then it's like a partial arc or something. I don't know.
Sure.
Math. So should this stuff be common sense?
Yes. Is it? No.
So I guess, should we address this before we, like, if say you're forming a new gaming group, do you think this is something where it's like, okay, here's this list of rules. There's the 15 bullet points on a piece of paper. These are the rules of my gaming group when you come over and play. Do you think that that's ever appropriate?
I think it kind of depends on how you're forming the gaming group. If it's like kind of a more organic, like, these are my friends who I hang out with all the time, and now we're going to start playing board games. No, you can't do that. But if you're like on Meetup and you're like, all right, I'm going to host a bunch of strangers, like, I think it's fine to kind of set an expectation because, you know, they're on the internet looking for a specific kind of thing. And I think it would be just as disappointing for them to show up for a Meetup that doesn't meet their expectations. So like putting that out there for them to see just means that you'll get the right kind of people and, you know, it doesn't ever really have to be addressed.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's kind of funny too. It's like, what do you put on that list? Like, you know, we talked about, you know, come on time. Okay, that makes sense. These are the types of games we're going to play. All right, that sets that expectation. That's good. Don't set, you know, sweaty drinks on top of the board.
See, I think you instead of saying don't set sweaty drinks out, if you put out coasters, people almost always use them.
True.
You as the host need to provide coasters always.
What about types of snacks that you bring? You know, don't bring snacks that dirty your fingers because we're playing card games and we don't want to get stuff on the cards.
I think that's fine.
Should we actually, I'm kind of talking myself into like these formalized rules. I agree with you. I don't think we need to do it for people that you play games with on a regular basis. I don't think that matters. But for like, you know, work or something like that, well, even work, I kind of work with these people and I don't have a problem with what they're doing.
Like people you know that you're inviting to game with you, like you kind of already know that they're going to be on the same page. And if they're really not, like, they're close enough that you could maybe have the conversation with them after, or like you can say in the moment, like, hey, stop bending my card, you know, like, that it's more for the, like, where it would be an awkward conversation, somebody you wouldn't want to necessarily talk to, that's where the kind of more formal rules could help.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I was trying to think maybe conventions and, but demo games, you sort of expect those are going to get destroyed. Like if I'm a publisher or something, I'm putting games out there. I'm not worried about making rules for people who are demoing this game because it's an advertising cost as far as that's concerned. Yeah. At a gaming cafe though, that might be different. Like if I'm running a cafe, I may have some rules about this is what we expect, you know, treat the games with respect. Or there's a monetary penalty to replace the games if something's destroyed. So I can kind of see how that could be something to formalize. So This is an interesting topic to me. Like I said, it almost always ends better once you have the conversation. It's just one of those things. It's really awkward to have those conversations ahead of time. So hopefully, you know, like our favorite Scythe group, people are listening to this. Have your gaming friends listen to it as well. And maybe it's a way of starting that conversation saying, yeah, so those cheese puffs that you're always bringing over, maybe you shouldn't bring those over anymore, you know, or you have to invest in the card sleeves so that I can sleeve all of my board games, even though I hate sleeving cards, but sometimes you just have to. So I do want to bring up one other thing. So as far as social contracts and such are concerned, one of the things that it's becoming a bigger issue. It's not that it was never a big issue, but a more realized issue. And that's one of inclusion. So I almost never think about this because I am not non-inclusive with the people I play with.
Yeah.
I'm pretty open to playing with anybody of, you know, and we're talking gender, race, handicap, those types of things. Be aware that, you know, there's really no reason to exclude someone besides that person's actual, like, who they are is like a game player. If you don't like the way this person plays games, you don't have to play games with them. But to make a snap judgment based on something that you don't know, like, you know, just based on their gender, it's like, I don't want to play games with Kitty because she's a girl and she's not going to be as strategic as I am. So it's just not worth playing with her. That's ridiculous. And I think anybody who does that, you should really, you know, take a deep look at yourself and there's problems with that. So on the other hand, if I play games with Kitty and I just know that she is a horrible person to play games with because she makes everything less fun, which is mostly
true. Yeah.
Yeah. Then that's valid. Like there are certain people I won't play games with. But it's not because of anything that's outside of their game playing personality. So I did want to mention it. I don't want to dwell on it, though.
I would like to throw one more thing in there. Be more generous to new players.
Yes.
I think that it can be very intimidating to start any new hobby. And just like a gentle reminder is much nicer than, you know, some harsh words. Because I feel like sometimes people don't give the benefit of the doubt. Like when a mistake is made, don't think it was made intentionally. Just point it out. It was probably an accident. You know, be kind.
Yep. Well, and if someone's taking too long or something like that, I find that in board games, we tend to try to coddle players more. And this really goes across gender lines a lot. Like I see it all the time when, you know, guys are trying to teach a girl to play. Like it's almost like they're talking down to them. Don't do that. Like it's unnecessary. At that same time, if somebody's taking a long time to play, maybe offer suggestions like key strategy points, but don't try to play their game for them.
Yeah.
And just don't take the game so seriously when you're teaching somebody new. I find online, this is very, very different. When you're playing an online game, people are just mean when you're new. It's like, you know, you stupid noob, why did you do that? I'm like, who do you think you're talking to? Like, you're talking to an actual person who's been playing this game for about an hour, and like all you can do is scream at them for not doing exactly the right thing. So I think in the board game industry, we're naturally nicer, but that might go to an extreme as well. And like I say, just treat everyone like you're teaching your sibling how to play a game. You know, with as much more respect than you give a sibling, probably, but with that same expectation of how you would teach that person. All right. Well, I think we've gone on long enough. Let's see. You can follow us if you'd like. Don't use this episode as an example, but Some of our episodes are okay. You can follow us on Facebook at @TabletopGameTalkPodcast. You can follow us on Twitter at @TabletopGameTLK. And I'm at @GameMasterChris, also on Twitter. You can support us via Patreon by going to TabletopGameTalk.com/Patreon. That's Patreon. Everybody who is a patron automatically gets entered into all of our contests. You can also email us for that normal email entry too, if you'd like. And for the rest of this, I'm going to hand this over to you.
All right. Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljim, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, the SGC, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Faz Flintham, Sean Peck, Toby Kraft, Eric Slander, Adam Kriblez, Mike Smith, and Christine Meyer. Until next week when we talk about Kickstarter again. Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. I'm going to edit out the poop text.
I'm sure he'll appreciate it. Sorry, Spencer just texted me the baby pooped.
This just in.
Popped up right across the top of my screen. Caught me by surprise.
This is the danger of recording remote. So...
Sorry.
Random monsters and random messages.